Welcome to the Mysterious Multiverse Podcast.
We discuss all things metaphysical, paranormal, and otherwise unexplainable.
We are a group of friends who are all on different stages of our spiritual journey and therefore have varying perspectives regarding the topics we will cover.
The opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the opinions of other persons or groups we may be affiliated with, our sponsors, or producers.
Welcome in, everyone. This is the Mysterious Multiverse, and this is Episode 3, Panpsychism. My name is Carolyn.
I'm Amy.
I'm Tristan.
And I'm Jason.
And away we go.
So what is panpsychism? Panpsychism is the belief that everything, from an atom to a rock to a squirrel to a human being, has consciousness, or an element of mind. So this belief was widely held up until the mid-19th century, when scientists began subscribing more to the belief that unless a phenomenon is verifiable through observation or logical proof, it's not meaningful. Basically, they couldn't explain consciousness, so they shelved it for another time. In its place, the two prevailing thoughts emerged, materialism and dualism. Materialism is the belief that consciousness can only derive through physical matter. In other words, you can only get consciousness from non-conscious materials. So at what point in this theory does physical matter become conscious? Dualism states that consciousness is separate and distinct from physical matter, but then raises the question of where it comes from and how it interacts with the physical world. While panpsychics do not necessarily believe that everything is fully conscious, they do believe every piece of matter has an element of consciousness. For example, the table may not have consciousness, but each atom in that table has a small piece of it. These atoms can come together to form more complex forms of consciousness, such as human subjective experiences. Other panpsychics believe everything is conscious, but at different levels or forms that we don't understand yet. In the extreme, there is another philosophy that states there is only consciousness and that physical matter doesn't really exist, making panpsychism a more moderate philosophy. So what that philosophy is called, that's called idealism, where there's only consciousness. So that's like the Matrix, where everything that you see and everything you're interacting with is all consciousness. There's no physical forms.
Right.
So is that sort of the theory that everything and everyone exists in a hologram?
Yes. We're all existing in some kind of mind. But that's extreme. So what that does is it makes panpsychism a more moderate philosophy, because it doesn't go all the way, but it does say there's a piece of mind within every single atom. And so the materialists believe is that you take certain atoms, you take any atoms, and you start building them together to form an organism. At some point, it becomes conscious, and that's where they leave it. Where panpsychism says, where does that come from? You know, if none of these atoms had consciousness to begin with, how did all of a sudden put them together create a consciousness?
And how many atoms being put together is required in order to gain a consciousness?
Exactly.
I mean, there are a lot of things that have a lot of mass, which means they are made out of a lot of atoms. Mm-hmm. So then does absolutely everything have consciousness? Just existing in a life form that we don't necessarily understand because it's not our version of consciousness.
And can't measure because, you know, in humans we can do functional scans of the brain and see where, you know, certain areas of the brain are lighting up with different, you know, images that the person's viewing and the experiences that they're having and viewing those images and having these, you know, asking them to think of certain things. But with a table, I mean, you really can't do that.
With the tree, they've actually done some experiments where they are finding that trees have heartbeats.
Yeah.
They actually have, in the evening or at night when everything's dormant, they've been able to measure that they have a heartbeat where they're actually moving the fluids up and down through their system. So it's not a heartbeat like ours because they don't have this mechanical
pump
happening. But it seems to be a pump kind of off of the planet.
Right.
And if there's a pump coming off of the planet and it's following the rhythms of the planet, Mm-hmm. Is the planet then alive?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people know the term Gaia, or Pachamama, mm-hmm. is the South American version of Gaia, and a lot of native cultures always thought that the planet itself is alive, and that's right. one of the theories in this panpsychism, is that mm-hmm. everything is alive.
I think it makes total sense. I mean, even if you think about going back to the trees, because mm-hmm. I know there's even certain types of trees where their root system is all connected.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So say you have a forest and you can actually wipe out some of the trees. Well, the ones that didn't get wiped out will actually die because that root system was then disturbed.
Yes. Yes, they were all interconnected under the ground and mm-hmm. sharing nutrients.
Right.
So what was it? There's a scientist up in Canada who has been doing experiments with the forest floor for more than 20 years, where she started off sort of bagging a series of trees and adding in a radionucleotide, and then coming back sometimes within hours, sometimes within days, and scanning the other trees in the area and finding that the one tree that had this radionucleotide added to its bagged air composition is now showing up in all of these other trees in the area. Mm. So that's when she realized that there's an underground system of communication mm-hmm. and sharing of nutrients. So it was it firs and hemlocks? And then
that
there was,
right.
I think there, it wasn't cedar trees, maybe it was oak trees that were like standalone. They didn't seem to share stuff with the other trees, but the firs and the hemlocks were trading nutrients. So like if one tree was dying, it was sending underground all of its nutrients to the other trees.
Wow.
And then if it was actually in a dormant stage where it had lost all of, the one type of tree, if it had lost all of its leaves, then it was sending its nutrients to the other trees that were still alive and producing things in a, you know, at the same time of year.
Wow.
So they're communicating with each other
mm-hmm. Most definitely
and protecting each other. So, picking up with the tree philosophy, and I mean, if trees are talking to each other, then that means that they are protecting each other. They are sharing nutrients. According to the studies from this lady up in Canada, if they plant a variety of trees, but some of them are the actual children of the existing trees, but then they also plant other trees, they will share nutrients with all the trees, but they'll send more nutrients to their own offspring.
Oh, wow. How interesting.
Yeah. Mm. And they'll even pull back their own growth and root zones to give those other trees more space.
Wow.
Not only for sunlight, but water and nutrients as well. So, and then this part of the study where there's a heartbeat of some sort where the nutrients are working its way up through the tree. So if trees have some sort of a consciousness, then that's a type of consciousness that is outside the realm of what we think of as consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it doesn't mean it's not consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's just different.
Right.
And it's on a level that we don't quite know how to communicate with, but as we're coming to realize that this exists, we're going to have to change the way that we think about things and the way that we do things.
Definitely. It kind of reminds me of that whole study done with plants. Mm-hmm. So they basically took the exact identical plant, put one in one room completely secluded, and put the other one in another room completely secluded. And then they had someone that would enter the one room and say, "I love you" to the plant every single day, right? And then they would go to the other room and say, "I hate you" to that other plant. And then, I mean, everything was the same, right? The watering, the light that they would put on it, everything else. And the plant that had the "I love you" was growing wonderfully. And then the plant that they were saying "I hate you" to was dying.
Mm-hmm. So they can understand us. No, I'm
kidding. Yeah.
Or at least our intention.
I feel like that.
And
I mean,
I think
to
that's
me,
it. I think that's it. It's the intention. They're receiving the energy wave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the energy, too. Because I wonder, I mean, it's like, of course, there's the energy. But I'm almost wondering, I mean, it's like, at that point, could we even maybe even think, are there emotions even attached?
There would have to be. There has to be a certain amount of emotion attached in order for you to create the wavelength of frequency, not only of love for one side, but of hate or contempt or dislike or whatever for something else. And the wavelengths are going to be different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, of course, they're not going to understand our language, but they are going to understand our intention and our frequency.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's like a pretty interesting way to view things, because it's like, if you think about how you can watch the plants do that, really that's like a physical manifestation of what maybe can happen to a lot of us as humans internally.
That's exactly, with your internal dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, the I'm not good enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm not, I can't do this, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You're breaking your own self down in your own consciousness, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And I'm sure if you watch yourself over time with that much negative influence that you're giving yourself and others are giving you, you could see a progression where you're progressively getting worse.
Right.
Maybe more physically ill, mentally not stable.
I think that's something that we don't take into enough account, is our overall physical health over the long run. There's a lot of a lot of people have a lot of negative thought processes towards themselves, towards others. Mm-hmm. And I know that when, just when I get stressed out, my body breaks down and I get very sick. So if I were to constantly have this negative dialogue, eventually my internal mechanisms are going to start breaking down the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We all have to be nicer to each other.
We really do.
And ourselves.
We definitely have to be kind to ourselves. But again, it's like those emotions are attached to the energy itself.
Yes.
And it's just letting you know that, I mean, how powerful really energy is. Because then, of course, that goes into everything, even like with healing, just by means of energy.
Yes.
So, and then when you're talking about the internal dialogue, I guess we could bring up, I think we all recently read about how some people have the internal dialogue and then some people actually do not, right?
Yes, fascinating study that sort of popped up on the internet recently.
Yeah.
Where do you have a running voice in your head? Do you not have a running voice? And how fascinating is that? Is that two different types of consciousness contained within humans? And how interesting that we all didn't realize that we were doing that.
Right. It's like the people that had the internal dialogue were surprised, because I'm one of those people. I was completely mind blown, thinking, wait, not everyone has, they don't talk to themselves in their head, like, you know. And then I think it said that for the other people, sometimes it might just be like pictures or different things that they're seeing. So instead of hearing, they're actually visualizing it. I mean, it's like, if you want to get even deeper with that, it almost makes you think about just, you know, different abilities from, you know, being clairsentient, claircognizant, and like all different things. It's like, you know, some people are more visual and then some people, you know, they're going to be more audible. And, you know, that's interesting. I don't know.
We're all dealing with all this information in various different ways.
Yeah.
The different learning styles.
Right.
So... yeah,
exactly.
I have that internal monologue. There's just always, I'm always yakking at myself in my own head. So at nighttime, I have to read a book or play on my phone just to focus on a single thing enough to shut that internal dialogue down enough to be able to go to sleep.
Oh, yeah. I hear you. How about Amy, Jason? How about you guys? Do you have internal dialogues or what's going on?
Absolutely.
I'm having one right now.
I don't think it ever shuts up.
And I hear you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it's true. I am having an internal dialogue as you guys are talking. I'm thinking about like five different other things at the exact same time, and you know, trying to take notes internally, externally. But one of the things that I was thinking of that maybe we could talk about a little bit is, as we were thinking about this topic and what is consciousness and do all things have a consciousness, I thought, well, if that's true, then, you know, we don't know a lot about the human brain, but we know that these things, we can kind of understand where they come from, what parts of the brain, and that it's like a perception, it's an experience. So how would we do that with, you know, the table or this rock or that plant, you know? But then the next thing that I was thinking is, you know, especially in the metaphysical circles, And just growing up, you know, my dad has been just completely immersed in anything that is not conventional, that is, you know, metaphysical, that is everything that is not conventional, essentially. And, you know, there was this idea of elevating your consciousness, increasing your consciousness. And I'm just curious to know what your ideas are on what that means and what are ways that you can do that.
That's a great question.
Well, the first
is a great question.
Your first question involving the rock or the tree, or how do we know that they have consciousness? Because it's easy to see that a human being does, because we can exhibit it at our level of understanding.
Yeah.
We don't understand other levels.
Right. Most of us can see that animals have consciousness.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. That's hard to question, but some people, their definition of consciousness does not extend.
Yeah, it's like the inanimate kind
right.
of objects.
Right.
Like the,
but I can wrap my head around a tree having consciousness, because a tree has life as we know it, or anything else that is living. But when we get to inanimate objects, objects that don't move, like rocks, how would we measure their consciousness? So panpsychism says that each element of that rock has a certain amount of consciousness, and together it has a conscience.
So that reminds me of Nikola Tesla's comment on crystals. Now, not every rock has a crystalline structure that I understand. I think they have different crystalline structures, so I don't know how far it applies. But he said that crystals are the entry-level life form on this planet. Now, for anybody who does any work with crystals, crystals are mainstream in almost all of our technology because it's known that quartz crystal basically has a regular tick to it. It has like a regular, almost like a heartbeat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of our quartz crystal clocks are based off of that regular beat. And we have learned that we can program things with that. Mm-hmm. So if a crystal has basically a heartbeat and it's a rock, which makes this an entry-level life form, then again, it's hard to wrap your head around some of these things, but it makes sense. And that's why so many people work with crystals, because they do have this energy that you can feel.
Definitely.
You have to learn how to do it, because we're so out of tune as a population on this planet with doing this. But when you've had somebody kind of explain it to you the right way, you can feel it and it makes sense.
Right. The different vibrations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that very fascinating. It's like with the different crystals, you know, I can hold them and just, you know, I can sense, like, this one, I can feel literally, like, this one is very active. Like, it just feels like it's about to bounce out of my hand. Some of them just feel like they're kind of jumping around. Some vibrate almost like a deep, they'd almost sound like they're like a bass, you know, like a lower, you know, more grounding, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's very fascinating and very interesting.
And not everyone can feel
that
energy. Or what
I know for
maybe
you, like
you
had,
would say is the rocks.
So we couldn't feel it for a long time either. People kept handing us crystals and saying, how does this make you feel? And I'm like, well, it feels like a cold rock.
Right, exactly.
So that's
just
great.
A solid cold
I mean, I can
rock.
Warm this up for you if you really want me to. But, and it's really pretty, but I'm going to hand it back to you.
Right.
And we didn't understand it for a long time. And finally, we happened upon a complete stranger who was doing a class. And we went to their house. And she sat like five of us down. And she made us close our eyes. And okay, so this is the basics of how we did this. She's had to sit down and close her eyes and kind of meditate a little bit, ground ourselves, which means put your feet on the floor and think about connection. Gaia, that we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. and just sort of take an assessment of where you are at inside yourself. Don't open your eyes, but then hold out your non-dominant hand.
Right.
So for me, I'm right-handed, which means my right hand is my giving hand. It's the hand I'm reaching for things with. That means it's my outgoing hand. It's not my incoming hand. My left hand, which is basically a paperweight, is my incoming hand. So without ever opening our eyes, we would hold out our non-dominant hand. She'd put a little something in there and we'd just sit and think about it for a minute, and then all of us, without looking, without knowing what was in our hand, would start describing mm-hmm. pictures that came into our head, mm-hmm. or sometimes you felt some sort of weird little, mm-hmm. like maybe I felt a strange tweak in my head,
right,
or
yeah.
something around my torso somewhere, and we'd all just kind of compare notes. And that's when we first started realizing that not only were the crystals that she put on our hand causing these effects, but so were the seashells.
Ah,
she
yeah.
She was putting occasionally seashells, mm-hmm. which she had experienced, had done the same type of thing, because it has also, there was a living being in it at one
right.
point, and that brings us back to the panpsychism, is the shell itself
right.
also alive. It has some sort of its own structure. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, that's how we finally opened up to feeling crystals. Mm. And I'm not as nearly as good as other people. It takes a bit of work. You really have to start learning yourself inside
yeah.
in order to be able to feel the energies mm-hmm. of other things. Because you
right.
have to know when it's your energy and when it's energy coming from somewhere else.
I completely agree with that. And I think most people, I will say, are not really that aware of
absolutely
their own energy.
Oh, right.
Their
yeah.
own mm-hmm. insides. I mean, just as basic as I ate something bad and I'm making a connection that I ate something bad and now my stomach hurts, or I have a weird cramp on my left side.
Yes.
And they're not aware of the energy that they're also giving out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know?
Right.
So,
and then there's other people who are really acutely aware of it. Far more than maybe even any of us.
Right.
We're
hyper aware.
Yeah.
Where, you know, other people are emitting all of mm-hmm. these frequencies, mm-hmm. even though they don't understand it, they don't right. recognize it, but they're still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And other people feel those things at a hyper amount,
oh, yeah.
and they're like, oh, this is everything in this room is
right.
oppressive because, you know, all these people are angry, and it's not that you can even necessarily see, they're not even mm-hmm. fighting with each other, but there's this
right.
underlying current in the room
mm-hmm.
that you can pick up, or not even a room, you could be outside mm-hmm. somewhere and you can still pick up the currents
right.
of a space or a group of people.
Oh, completely.
Or yeah.
I think it just happens in, just going to say real quick, I think it happens in general, because it's like, you know, obviously with empaths, I mean, that's going to be, you know, because I'm an empath, mm-hmm. and I remember before, it was very like, it was a lot. I would just feel so many different things off of different people, mm-hmm. and it would be very difficult actually with my emotions, because then I was picking up. So if I was somewhere and someone started, you know, I knew something was really making them sad and stuff like that, and they were like crying. It was like, not, you know, it was like just basically like I started actually feeling that pain inside, mm-hmm. like my heart hurt too. And so I would even then start crying, or, you know, even like with anger sometimes it would like, but it would feel so intense. It was overwhelming. Yeah.
So I think the general population might be able to relate to that by, like, if you're watching a Hallmark commercial and you see the little old lady
right.
and she goes out to her mailbox and she gets this card and it's the only piece of communication she's had from everybody. And almost everybody that tugs at their heartstrings, and they can feel
right,
that, because
right.
it's really, it's super, it's over the top and it's obvious and you can really get it. But some people feel that type of thing all the time.
Right.
With absolutely everybody. And those are the people who really have to actively do things mm-hmm. to shield themselves and put
oh,
up
yeah.
a bubble and all
that's
the,
what I had to do.
Energy
it helped
work.
A lot. Helped a lot.
So going back to your statements about about elevating your energy. Elevating your energy, I think, falls into this because...
Well, elevating your... Like, how would you... And you hear people saying this, elevating your consciousness. So increasing your consciousness.
Part of it is recognizing that you have energy.
Right.
And kind of what we're talking about mm-hmm. here is that you have to understand that you not only have, when you ate the food and it caused your stomach to hurt, that there's a correlation mm-hmm. and then there's more than that. There's, right. there's you're having a conversation with somebody and you're starting to feel the feelings that they feel mm-hmm. when they're telling you their story mm-hmm. because... It's not that you've been there and done that. Maybe you've never had that experience, but they have so much grief that you have a shared grief and you can feel the same sort of heart hurt mm-hmm. and the anger and all those things start going through you too. And when you start really realizing that, one, it's not yours, it's theirs, mm-hmm. but you have empathy with that, mm-hmm. then you're starting to realize that there's other energy. It's a shared energy space. Mm-hmm. And as you start realizing those things, your energy, you start becoming more elevated. Mm-hmm. Also with the grounding mm-hmm. and...
I feel like shifting your thoughts, because thoughts yes. are things, right? Those thoughts have a lot of energetic power. And so I feel like when you actually start changing those, the way you're thinking and stuff like that, and also surrounding yourself with people also that are, you know, at a higher vibration and stuff, I think it just naturally occurs. You're basically, because energy like moves at different rates, right? You have some,
yes.
you know,
there's
exactly right.
There's low energy,
slow, then fast and quick and stuff. And so I think maybe that has to do with it. I would imagine that. For me, I mean, I would think that basically when you're raising your vibration, I almost see it vibrating at maybe a higher frequency. Mm-hmm. That's how I maybe see it. How do you guys see that,
yeah.
actually?
Yeah, I see the same thing.
Yeah?
People who have a lot of the negative self-talk and they're sort of wallowing in base problems mm-hmm. and the ones who don't realize that there are energy issues, that they don't realize they're giving off energy, they don't realize anybody else is giving energy, blah, blah, blah. That's a very low, slow yeah. baseline vibration. But when you have better self-talk,
yes,
and you're thinking of things more through your heart space, I mean, the head space is good. You got to think of things through the head space. That's sort of the logical sort of half of things. But you also, you have to have the balance of thinking things also through the heart space.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to be willing to feel your way through things as much as try to use logic to think your way through things. If it's only on one, you're missing this whole other vibration. And the vibration of the heart, the vibration of energy is... I think we're starting to find out it's everything mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because the heart actually has the same vibration as the planet.
That makes sense, because even going back to what you're talking about with the trees and the heartbeats and stuff,
right.
maybe it is just this one heartbeat of a connected consciousness.
Yeah. And if we're connected to the planet,
yeah.
then we're connected to everybody and everything. So... you are elevating your consciousness by starting to think of things in a more mm-hmm. compassionate way, mm-hmm. not only for yourself, but others.
I've always thought of it, and my dad is actually sort of just thinking of all of the things that he's done and exposed himself to, mm-hmm. is just really like elevating your awareness. And through that, you know, just exposing yourself and having different perceptions and experiences.
That's absolutely true. Anybody who travels a lot mm-hmm. will come back and tell anybody who hasn't traveled, who's never left their insular little spot on the planet, that you don't have a bigger awareness of what's mm-hmm. going on until mm-hmm. you start seeing other perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
So, yeah, the more you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know anything.
Right.
But that's different than
yeah.
having other experiences.
So true. So true.
Oh my goodness, that's very true.
Jason.
Yeah.
Is the inner dialogue going?
No, well, we seem to veer off the topic for a while, but it obviously it came back around, and I was kind of impressed at how
How did that happen?
I was just observing that. There's an electromagnetic pulse, and it goes at a certain rate, and it goes to the whole planet. And the tree has that pulse, and our hearts have that pulse. And so everything has that pulse. And we can maybe prescribe that it also has consciousness at whatever level it does. Okay? So how does that change, say that theory is true? Because philosophy, all it is it's a barrier between an idea and science.
Right.
So before science can figure out where it all comes from, or even if they, you know, they just don't have the technology to do it, or if they do, I don't know about it, but they certainly didn't at the time that these studies were put out. I was going with that.
They don't have the technology to determine what level consciousness exists.
Right. So we're in the level of philosophy right now. So before it becomes science, and this philosophy is a very important step of that, because basically philosophy is everyone having the discussion.
Mm-hmm. You have
and
to have the idea that
letting the scientists know that we're even interested in finding out about this in the first place, and then the science comes along and explains it. So if panpsychism turns out to be an actual law,
right,
maybe, then how does that affect your view of the planet as a whole? Or how does that change your daily interactions, say, when you're stepping on rocks or on the lawn, or the foods you eat, or the fossil fuels that you use for your car? Or, you know, how does it, knowing that, change things for you?
I think for me, I mean, it's kind of interesting because, not with everything, obviously, but there's been certain things where I felt that I already almost felt like they had feelings or almost were alive. Like the plants, for sure. I mean, I literally had a absolute black thumb before. And then all of a sudden, I started really... I think it was actually, you know, it was after I started doing Reiki.
Oh, okay.
And after doing the energy. So I was doing, you know, because Karen Fraser was talking about doing Reiki on her plants. And so for me, I started doing Reiki on the plants. And then I started really almost like feeling their energy back. Like I could actually start seeing things. And I know this sounds, you know, kind of strange. Maybe, maybe not. But it's like, you know, there's all this different communication. Spirit communication,
nothing
animal communication.
Nothing sounds strange to us.
Yeah. It is the mysterious multiverse, right?
You're in the right
it
room.
It is.
So
you're
for
in the
me,
right room.
I felt like within probably the last year, I've actually felt like I've almost had plant communication.
Interesting. Oh, interesting.
And you
so,
communicate with this one? Because I'm just looking at it, and it does not look happy.
For the most part, it looks pretty happy. Just that one guy over
just
there.
Just the one little
one leaf.
He's trying.
Maybe he needs a crutch.
I'm sorry. Go
well,
ahead.
That's okay. But yeah, so for me, it's like I started, you know, kind of sensing things, and I just felt like there it's almost like I need more water. I need, you know, I need more sunlight. And it was different things like that. I started actually kind of petting the leaves.
Yeah.
And so that was just something that was naturally occurring. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, my whole thing on plants changed, and I can see where things can change. But now I look into the kitchen right now, and I'm looking at my Keurig machine, and I'm not sure. I'm like, well, what are you thinking right now, Keurig? Are you thinking? Are you tired of making us coffee?
It wants you to take a sponge to it, clean it up a bit. That's
it's
what
interesting,
it just,
though.
It just told me that.
It wants a bath.
But for instance, though, I mean, another thing, we've got hardwood floors, we've got a wood table, and that's going back to the wood. So I can definitely sense there's a consciousness to furniture, you know, different aspects like that. Leather, right, when we're wearing different, like, leather clothing and stuff. The granite, you know, granite countertops, because that's obviously the rock, right? So there's a lot of things in our home that actually has a lot of energy and consciousness. I personally could believe that for sure. But then there are some other things, like I said, I mean, there's energy. I mean, the thing is, it's like, you know, I even teach on that. It's like, yeah, the Keurig machine, that's energy. That has energy. So if energy is in movement and alive and has its own frequency, then there is that possibility of it maybe having its own consciousness. But yet consciousness is a lot of times defined as actually something having its own experience. So does that mean that a Keurig machine could have its own experience?
It is having its own
experience.
It's very slow moving, kind of like a tree.
I think it's more easy to understand when you're thinking about the construct of consciousness with relation to humans.
Well, sure, because that's what we understand.
Right.
And so that goes back to an earlier part of our conversation that even though trees are very clearly alive, there's no way for us to understand their version of consciousness and their experience.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, and that's even one step closer to us because they're obviously sharing the same heartbeat of the planet that we do. Mm-hmm. So I think plastic molded products are even a step further away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we do have to consider that they are still made up of atoms.
Right.
It's still little tiny pieces of energy that have been molded into something that it's taken a shape and it's being used in this particular form for now. Mm-hmm. But in 10,000 years, all that energy will have just been reabsorbed into not only the planet, but the universe as a whole again, and then just reformed into something else later on.
Right.
So that kind of makes you wonder if not even the air then is
right.
a version of consciousness, and that's how we're all interconnected. I mean, we have these thoughts, and we're going back to the, you know, how do you elevate your consciousness, and are we interconnected? And people who think that we're interconnected, we're having these thoughts that we're actually starting to realize that we can share thoughts back and forth.
Mm-hmm,
and then
right.
there's the quantum mechanics that they've done where mm-hmm. you can take cells from one person and then take a vial of their cells 200 miles away and then agitate the person over
right.
here, and their cells 200 miles away are still going to be agitated, and it still registers that they're mm-hmm. agitated. So
I've never even heard of that.
That's showing the connection to things even when they're removed.
What is that for me and for the listeners? How do we look into that?
So that's the basics of quantum mechanics, and there is a particular name for that, which is...
Entanglement.
Quantum entanglement.
There we go.
Yes, thank you.
Nice call. You're welcome.
Thank
you, Jason.
I knew I was going to contribute something. That's what I was waiting for.
Your shining moment. quantum entanglement.
Yes. So... theoretically, that's how twins who are born in the same womb and perhaps live hundreds of miles apart know when one is having a good day or a bad day, because they are very intimately quantumly entangled because they share so much. Mm. But not only that, I think we're starting to learn that our consciousness, that's how kind of remote viewing works, and that's how mm-hmm. Psychics are able to sort of look at a distance at things that are happening. They tap mm-hmm. into that energy, but you mm-hmm. have to have an energy wave that you're writing in order to tap into somebody's specific energy at a distance. Could be on the other side of the planet, or mm-hmm. theoretically the moon or Mars or anywhere. I mean, there's some sort of a viable space. We're not just crossing nothing. We're everything seems to be connected.
And
we're
theories only the dark matter that's in between space.
Everything.
Right. The panpsychics are calling that consciousness. And so the space between things are consciousness.
So that's the air that we're breathing.
Right.
That's everything.
Wow.
The air that we're breathing is consciousness.
What about interdimensional?
Well, that takes a whole
another thing.
Okay, that's a whole other
Never mind. No. You can't talk about it.
That's where
that's
going.
A whole different level of it. And sure, if there's no time and there's no... You know, there's so many dimensions and these are all happening at the same time.
Right.
Then absolutely, if you're conscious enough, why doesn't that bridge? And maybe it does. Maybe that's where we get some of our ideas.
Right.
And maybe that's where, you know, some things come up. Were we talking about the other day?
So wait a minute. While you're on that, I was watching this video and this guy named Dr. Fritz Albert Popp, P-O-P-P, was saying that all beings are... beings of energy and light. But the most interesting thing he said is that when you think of something, you know, you think of something and you see that image in your head, mm-hmm. it's literally appearing right in front of you. We haven't manifested it in our 3D world, but we have manifested it in the realm of another dimension, and that's what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mind blown on that one. I was like,
Just had a thought. There's a connection then also with past lives. You have people that actually, from previous lives, are experiencing different like ailments and traumas and different things in this life that are attached to them. So that's pretty interesting, too.
Yeah, that whole past life thing, that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
That, what you were just talking about, it really, I mean, when you, because I feel that you could potentially communicate, right? And I don't have psychic abilities. I'm not a medium.
That you're aware of.
Yes, that right. That you're aware
okay,
of.
Okay, everyone is psychic. Hashtag you are psychic. Hashtag everyone is psychic.
Hashtag inner dialogue.
That's right.
The vibration.
Hashtag inner dialogue. Hashtag I'm not sure if the air is psychic. That's where I start kind of getting lost into down the rabbit hole. But it just made me think that when you were talking about the Dr. Pop, I guess his name is P-O-P-P, could you, like, how real is that interaction? Because you could imagine, you know, like, after my cat passed, I still do, well, sometimes I'll imagine him, and I feel that I am with him.
And does it feel real?
Yeah,
and I'm really with you.
Yeah, and I'm interacting in my mind. And I feel that, you know, even when he was still living, that is one way that I would communicate with him when I was on vacation or, you know, even lying in my bed and he's on the floor and I'm trying to tell him, you know, can't wait to see you in the morning or whatever, you know, just be strong, you know, because he was sick for so long. But, you know, it just really makes me, it's not just imagination.
It's not. And that is a question of whether or not consciousness and our souls transcend physical body death. That's a huge conversation that people have been having for a long time. But we sort of have a lot of friends and live in a realm where that is normal.
Right.
And for most people that we know, it's not even really a question.
Exactly.
A lot of people still question this, but literally we have conversations, maybe through others, our medium friends. They're not encountering what some people would call an imprint, where it's like a timestamp that just replays over and over and over again. They're having an actual intelligent conversation where somebody's responding to questions.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, you already have an established an energetic
connection.
Bond, an energetic connection with this other consciousness.
Right.
That just because it lost its cellular structure of these organic bodies, does the consciousness move out of the body and just into the air that we're theorizing is also still alive?
Maybe that's and why the air holding has a consciousness.
Bingo.
Wow.
So if energy doesn't die, then you should never really lose that connection, even though the carbon form is no longer here. I mean, and there's going to be listeners out there, and probably not listening to this one, that want scientific explanations for that, and it doesn't exist, and that's why it's still in philosophy.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're still talking, and we can still talk about this without having the research. The science won't back it up, but I got a feeling that the science is going to break something open, and we're going to see all of these connections that we never thought existed.
Agreed.
And that the whole world is this one big network, and it's a living organism, and we're all just parts of this living organism.
Right.
The bigger issue is that we're interconnected. And the interconnectedness means that we all work with each other rather than... I mean, we as humans have been in such a position of we're here to just... use our environment and use these resources and blah, blah, blah. We've been so destructive for so long, not realizing that we're trampling the very things that support our own life here on this planet.
I think that's one of the biggest disservices that religion has done to us, is to make us feel like we're created to rule over the planet, that everything is at our disposal, and it's all about us and our creator.
And whatever happens to us after this life, as opposed to here and now.
We can
How
use
about here and now?
Focusing
the whole
so much
planet.
On that.
And it doesn't matter because in the end we're going to heaven and this planet's going to be destroyed with all the people that didn't believe.
Right, right.
So when we're thinking that way, we're not thinking globally anymore. We're thinking...
Me.
All you know, everything. I'm in control of the animals. I can eat the animals. I can use them for pets or use them to plow my fields or whatever I want to use them for. I can do anything to the water, to the soil. It doesn't matter. Because this isn't the end game.
If I can just shoot that thing because it doesn't matter because it's not alive. Right. Doesn't have consciousness anyway. Who cares about that thing?
Right.
Until we get past that, we're not going to get past the pollution we're not going to get past polluting and destroying our planet.
Right.
We're not going to get past the narcissism that is sweeping the country.
Oh my God.
Because if you're not thinking about your welfare, and I'm not thinking about your welfare, and I'm not thinking of the welfare of the planet, then... Why, you know, then I don't care. I'm just thinking about me, what's in it for me. If it doesn't serve me, I'm out.
I mean, that doesn't matter. You're going to go to heaven anyway, so it's fine.
Well, I am, but I'm thinking of you, too.
He's already in heaven, Carolyn. He has you.
Aww. But, you know, it is something that is growing. It's just like when you look at the different generations, even what they're called, and you have the millennials, and a lot of people are like, just call them the me generation, because it's like, it's almost like an uprising of even just entitlement with that as well. But I agree with that. You have the narcissism, the power of money, the greed, the wars and the conflicts of everything with this world. And then the people, like you said, they just don't care. They're like, you know, I'm here for a little bit. That earth is going to be destroyed one day anyway. I don't know if I'll be here for it. If I am, great. If not, whatever.
But then, on the flip side of that is this whole group of people who are starting to see things from another point of view.
Yes.
And who are raising their vibration.
Yes.
And and other people are sort of weirdly just waking up.
Yes.
It's so true.
And they start seeking people like us out for these conversations. And they start raising their vibration. They start looking into things and finding the little ways to do it. And then they, in turn, share a bit of information with somebody else. And there's this whole thing. And it's happening not just here. It's happening all over the planet.
Yeah,
people
for sure.
It's like this old paradigm of thought process is just like being chipped away. Like we're literally being cracked out of the rock, whether it's living or not living.
Right.
And our thought process and our energy is elevating.
Right.
And so there's that's also going on. So both of these things are happening at the same time.
Completely
so
agree.
So the people who are raising their elevation, their
vibration,
they're elevating their vibration.
Raising their elevation.
They're raising
these people that are raising their elevation.
They are going high. They might be high.
Notice.
It's called the Everest mindset. We've coined it here today, folks.
They're smoking the bowl. You know, they're just high.
Is that resonating like 420 megahertz or something?
Ooh. 420 megahertz high. #high as a kite.
I agree with you
wholeheartedly, though,
yes.
But the people who are raising their vibration and are actually starting to think not only logically, but from that heart space, and we know from the Heart Math Institute, who has done the science work on this, that the heart vibrates at the same beat as the vibration of the planet. Those people feel so much worse when the other people, the narcissists and the I don't give a damns and the what's in it for me's, it's that much more painful when it throws those people also into a depression.
Right.
Which is a real bummer because we need the people who are elevating and...
Oh, yeah. I agree with the awakening, though, wholeheartedly. I mean, one thing I thought was interesting recently is you know, one day went to Kohl's, and then another day was like, you know, drive through at Dutch Brothers getting a coffee. And I would say both times, the girls checking us out, probably early 20s, and actually both had on a Tool for Evolution necklace. Yeah, and it was just so crazy. I'm just like, well, I'll be. Like, you know, and it was actually really wonderful to see people that were younger, you know, and even like seeing our tools and, you know, Amy pointing it out. And it was really a wonderful thing. And I feel like, you know, there's been for so long a stigma around anything metaphysical or anything like that, the woo-woo and all that stuff. You know, there's just been a lot trying to make it seem like such a bad thing. And I feel like with the awakening now, people are actually having more conversations. And that's what I always say to people. Just keep having these conversations because it removes stigma. Right. And then people will be able to have their own experiences. And they'd be able to find other people that are like-minded, which just makes the vibrations, energy just raise higher.
Just raise, And I mean, we have a lot of friends, and some of us ourselves are in groups for what some people would call ghost hunting. So for me, that goes back to the TV shows that a lot of people are upset about with the Ghost Hunter TV shows, because they don't necessarily show reality. The reality of dealing with ghosts or the paranormal. However, what it did was it opened the conversation in the general public, and people started sharing their own personal stories. I've been interested in this stuff all my life, and eventually somebody would come out of the woodwork and they would tell me their own personal little story. Just like, oh, you know, once my grandma's rocker was just rocking by itself, but I've never told anybody because they would think I was crazy. And you're like only the second person I've ever told in my whole life that I saw this and I experienced it. And I know it happened, but people would just like think I'm nuts. Those type of things used to happen all the time, and now people are having those conversations because things like the Ghost Hunter shows, as unrealistic as they may be, opened the conversation to normalize this metaphysical.
It's very true.
I saw a quote the other day that I thought was really good about this very thing by I think his name is Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, who's actually one of the leading scientists behind the whole panpsychism thing.
Oh, okay.
And he said, it's not paranormal, it's normal.
Right.
It's not supernatural, it's natural.
Yes.
Just because we're finally coming to the place where we can talk about it and think about it and recognize. We've come up out of the basic mode of clothing and food and shelter and water. We've moved to a place where we can actually think of higher level vibration things. And so now we're realizing that these things aren't, you know, the boogeyman's not out to get us. It really is something that's normal.
Yeah, we're just recently out of survival stage, where we actually have the free time to think about things and to discover things. Where before it was just surviving every day. Do we have enough food? Do we have enough water? Is our shelter adequate? And now we're at a point where we created all these things to take care of those things for us.
Right.
And we are the first generation to have the leisure time to be able to ponder these questions.
And hopefully the robotics more so than the future and we're living those things for
exceedingly long time.
Oh, yeah.
To progress that, whatever we're talking about, to progress those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So many of these ideas that are unconventional, right? Like the paranormal or the supernatural or, you know, the trees having consciousness. I really do believe that, you know, given some time and people pondering this and researching this and finding ways to research it, which is one of the problems, you know, it's you can't and finding the money to actually do the research. You know, you have to have funding and people that are interested and
the old
whatnot,
paradigm way of shutting that down because they didn't believe in it.
Right. But even just mind-body connection, this is a very well, not quite understood, but it is well established now. It's not woo-woo. Mm. And before, you know, let's say 20 years ago, even, that was kind of still woo-woo.
It really
now
was.
They've got, you know, nurses that are regularly trained in Reiki at, you know, Columbia Medical Center and, you know, I think even like Yale, I can't remember exactly what Ivy League, you know, hospital that's associated with that medical school, but, or nursing school rather, but they're doing Reiki on the patients just as a regular practice. Hospitals are hiring acupuncturists. I mean, you know, these things, they're, people are starting to really kind of pay attention and saying, oh, there really must be something to this crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. We're using essential oils for our patients at our hospital.
Wow.
And it's considered normal. No one's freaked out about it.
Yeah.
It's just, this will calm you down.
Right.
This will wake you up. This will, you know, do this and this will do that. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about it like it's just always been that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it has always been that way, but it accepted in the medical community is that's a huge step.
The Western medical community.
Right.
It's kind of, it's always been in the Eastern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's we're never going to truly become whole until we bring our Western medical and our Eastern medical together and blend them, because everything is energy. Oh. It can't just always be pills and cut them.
You'd have to wipe out the pharmaceutical industry, and that would cut. that is business as you know it.
Well, an aromatherapy isn't going to fix everything. You have to have antibiotics for some things.
Right.
Sure.
You know, there is validity in both sides, but it can't be one or the other.
Right.
We have to bring them together.
It's such another podcast. It's like we could
okay, even get deep with this.
I'm not sure.
All these different types of like healing
really
things.
We could really go off the deep end. I could go off the deep end talking
with,
about that.
With panpsychism, all these different essential oils and everything else we're talking about, even the needles for acupuncture, right? Is consciousness, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's a scent, but
you don't want to get some bad oils.
The oil came off of a living plant, and it's that living plant cellular structure. It's its essence.
Yeah.
So another aspect of panpsychism that I think is really important when we're thinking, how does this actually affect us in our day-to-day lives? It's going to affect us in the way we do our farming, because with that experiment you're talking about with the plants,
right?
Even if, what kind of energy are we sending those plants in the way that we farm today? You know, is it sustainable? Are we doing it in an ethical manner?
Right.
The same thing with our food animals. Are we doing that in an ethical manner? And is that sustainable? And is it even sustainable for us to even be doing that at all? Once we realize that if a rock has consciousness, how much more consciousness is in a cow or a pig? Or
right.
A chicken? And what's the difference between the consciousness of a dog and a cat and a cow and a pig? Right?
Right.
Some are house pets and some are sort of food animals. And it's not just because cats don't taste good, because they're delicious. No,
I'm just kidding.
I am highly disturbed. Get out of my home.
That was funny.
But anyway, those are some things that we can bring into. Those are important questions. If everything has consciousness, then we need to start treating our planets. And the way we do things, we have to put more thought into it.
Right.
We have to be more ethical.
So I was watching a TED Talk the other day, and it was a South American native who has an Aztec history. And he's actually from a tribe that's borderline not really touched. He had really never even seen white people.
Oh, wow.
Or only spoke his native language until he was like 9 or something, and finally went to a very small town and saw that there were other people that existed outside of his tribal societies. So it took him a long time to learn. I think the first language he learned was Portuguese, and then he had the opportunity to move to England, and he did that specifically so that he could learn English in order to sort of speak to the world.
Oh, wow.
And so during his TED Talk, he was saying that the medicine men in his tribe when they would go out to collect plants and roots and whatnot for their medicines, you can't just go grab whatever you want.
Right.
They would go out and ask the plant if the plant was willing to provide this type of medicine and then wait for the response before they then harvested that for the medicine that they were going to create. Because if they just went and grabbed whatever, then right. the plant didn't necessarily provide that type of medicine, and the medicine that they created out of this concoction didn't necessarily work.
Wow.
Right. That's a whole different level.
That really is.
And so that's his purpose in moving off of his own continent and away to learning a whole other language is in order to share this the long-standing native understanding of how plants and how Gaia work.
Yeah.
And how we can get back to that.
I think that's absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do. I mean, even going back to what Jason was saying, I thought it was interesting because, you know, we always talk about, I mean, you know, of course, everything being like organic and grass-fed and all these different things. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm doing, you know, of course, I'm doing better knowing this doesn't have hormones. And mm-hmm. these chickens, they have not been in a cage. They're running around, you know, having a good time. And these are happy, happy chickens, happy cows, happy pigs. But then again, it's like, like you said, I mean, well, is the grass they're eating, how is that maintained? Is that grass happy? I mean, this gets deep, really, when you think about it with your foods.
It gets really deep really fast.
Wow.
Just like the trees. And the purpose in this lady who was the scientist who was doing work in the forest was specifically to alter the way that we do forestry, because when we replant, an entire section of forest with only one type of tree in order to be harvested again. But that's not the way that the trees work. The trees are inner sharing types of things amongst themselves. And if it's all the same type of tree, then they're not getting the same type of nutrients when they need it.
Right.
Or when they don't need nobody else to offload it to when they need to get rid of stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty fascinating.
And so from what I've read, the natives knew this in... when they became an agricultural society, when they started not just constantly traversing, but were settling down and creating crops, even their crops were intermixed with different plant species so that the plant species helped feed each mm-hmm. other. Mm-hmm. And it didn't strip the ground of all the nutrients, because one type of plant's just going to take all the nutrients of the type that it needs. And if you keep replanting that exact same type of plant in the same soil, there's nothing left for it to take. But if you rotate your crops to even if you're just planting an entire acre of one type of plant, the next year it should be something different because it's going to pull different nutrients and it's going to return different nutrients. Mm-hmm. Their philosophy was, you know, they didn't use mass industrialization where they had these giant tractors go through and rip everything up. So if an entire row had five different types of plants in it, it didn't matter. But the plants were all working in harmony with each other because, as we're learning, everything is symbiotic. Everything is interrelated. Everything works together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it will change drastically. I think we're going to have to go back to small farming from this giant industrialized way of living that we have sort of evolved or devolved into. I can't really say that it's evolving. I think it's devolving into this.
That's a huge paradigm
industrialized
shift.
Thing.
That's an interesting thought.
I've actually been thinking about that recently, though, because I was actually, you know, just thinking about people's health, you know, way back when. I thought, you know, things were a lot different back then. I'm thinking about the times before even processed foods and whatnot, you know. But it's like now we do have just these massive, just, you know, it's not just these local farms anymore. It's great when you can get maybe the eggs and stuff like that, and you can even get meats and stuff from like local farmers and stuff. That's why I highly love farmers markets, you know. You can go there, but yeah, I mean, it's sometimes it's like when you have these big corporations and people that own these places, it's like, how well is that maintained, you know? Like, how well is this actually being tracked, and are you paying somebody off so you can say you're organic and maybe you're not? Yeah. I mean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Not in California.
California's good. They definitely track and...
So strict and highly regulated. And
hey.
Supposedly.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's kind of necessary, though, because the people who are in it only for money and only for profits will take whatever corners they can cut.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So somebody has to have oversight on these people. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, how long until people realize that they have to be in it for each other?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole different genre of topic.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I was thinking, I was just wondering about closing thoughts here.
What about this other...
Oh, little... I actually was going to use that as my closing thought.
Okay.
I can go ahead and dive into it then.
Or do it.
Dive.
Let me dive. I'm diving now.
Deep diving down the rabbit hole.
So basically, when I was trying to do, you know, a little bit of research and stuff on panpsychism, there was an argument for it, and it was by Thomas Nagel. And one of the things he had said was that matter in humans isn't different from any other matter in terms of what it's made of. And so I thought that was actually a very fascinating argument that could be true, because it's true. I mean, all matter is the same, right? The matter in you and I, it's the matter that is made, that creates anything in here. So it is an interesting argument for there being a consciousness to that. He went further into saying that basically, as far as there being like consciousness and mental states, that is obviously properties of us, again, with the same matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the mental states aren't derived from physical properties alone.
Hmm.
So therefore he was saying that all matter must actually have mental properties.
Mm.
Which might help explain ghosts.
Mm.
I mean, they don't have physical matter.
Right.
But plenty of people have experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Again,
that's
the
so
consciousness
true.
Of an energy source
right.
that you can have an intelligent conversation with, or that creates a time stamp and a loop, or it, you know, a pet. I mean, even with our dog having passed away, we
yes.
have occasionally felt him as well, and I've even felt a cat walk across my bed
mm-hmm.
from, you know, I don't know which one it was, because there's been a few, but
right.
you can feel the footsteps,
yep.
which meant that not only was it not physically there, but that it was interacting with the fabric and the mattress on my bed, because I could feel it and I could
mm-hmm.
hear it,
right.
but it wasn't there.
Yeah.
So, mm. yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It really is interesting when you think about that, actually. And put it all together.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a deep conversation, huh?
This yeah. is, yeah.
It's very interesting.
It's really a little scared is. Of this one.
I was wondering where it was going to go, actually, because this all started from a post that you did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that
an
was...
article you posted, and my mind felt a little bit blown.
I didn't know that there was a term for it. I would never be able to... Before this, have looked it up by the term panpsychism, but
right.
Once that term popped up, I realized that there are articles and videos, and it's a thing.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing.
It's a thing, for sure. So, Amy, what about your thoughts? What are your closing thoughts on this?
I don't have closing thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
Skip over me. I've said enough.
Jason?
Well, I think if you're going to... take the view that everything has consciousness and that we're all interconnected, then we've really got to take a lot better care of ourselves and our mm-hmm. loved ones and our community and our planet.
Yes.
And if everyone just keep in mind, what kind of world would you like to leave for Betty White when we're gone?
Yes, yes.
Good old Betty.
Then we'll start making the right decisions, the more ethical decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I mean, when we know that everything's living and we're not special in that way, then we're going to start treating everyone and everything a little bit better.
Right.
Which will in turn help us.
Yes, definitely.
So I think that's why this conversation is really important. Pan meaning everywhere.
Right.
Psychism meaning mind. So
right.
everywhere is a mind, everywhere is consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We're all one.
We are, yes.
And that's not a new concept. But we've lost that.
Yeah.
And it's time to, I think, reclaim it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Carolyn?
Well, I think this kind of has some implications for the people who went vegetarian or vegan because they were attempting to not engage the consciousness of animals, which is fantastic.
Right. Yeah,
it's really a step in the right direction.
Completely.
But if we're going to understand this, that everything is conscious, then the plants are also conscious, and they have actually registered. There are scientific studies where they have registered that plants scream, and plants will shrink away from things, and plants will send, just like the trees, they will send information from one plant to another. They are just as living as everything else. Coming to an understanding of whether or not there's different levels of consciousness is perhaps a future thought process. At this point, I think we just have to start kicking around in our mind that everything does have a consciousness. So it's not that we shouldn't eat the animals and only eat the plants, or because then people are going to start getting freaked out that now we can't eat the plants either.
Right.
You know, we can't eat anything. It's not about that.
Right.
It's about honoring the cycles that we live in, because we are part of the cycle here on the planet, and we can't just mass destroy things. We have to honor the things that we do take for their lives in order to feed our life. But they in turn are also taking the lives of other things. Other animals take the lives of other animals, but they don't hoard those things. They only take what they need, and they leave stuff for others who also need some, and then it decays down, and the decay process feeds the plants and feeds the underground spores and all the other things. It's all a huge cycle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we really, really, really need to come to a place where we honor and respect and consciously engage with anything and everything else on our planet.
Right.
I mean, even my car. I get into my car in the morning, and I pat it, and I say, hey, morning.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to go. Thank you. Thank you for, you know, it's just a short ride today. And the same bubble that I keep around myself, my car has its own bubble for people, you know, bumping into it and whatnot. It's got its own little bubble. And at the end of the day, I pat it and tell it I love it. And, you know, it's really not anything more than that, but I'm trying to honor the fact that my car is also organized energy.
Right.
It is, like you said, it's the same molecules, it's the same, the same matter.
Exactly.
The same stardust that we're made of is also molded and formed and shaped in my car, so
I think it's great. I talk to my car, too. Mm-hmm. I've even done, like, Reiki on my car before, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we Just in closing, I had a thought where we had problems with our front door one day, and we had to kind of break in our own front door.
Yeah.
And since that time, we have water damage in that same area. It's almost like we created a cancer in our house where it was injured.
Oh, wow.
And I've spent time apologizing to the house.
Yeah.
And trying to give that specific area love, and I don't see any additional water damage, even though nothing else has changed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I think the house is sort of, you know, trying to fix it its own self.
That's really fascinating.
You know, when you think about it, when a house is abandoned, even for a week, the whole house changes. It starts getting musty. It starts decaying at a rapid rate.
Yes, that's true.
So That's an interesting thought since you brought that up.
That really is.
Because you walk past abandoned places all the time, and how quickly they decay when there's no energy moving in and out of it is just, it's huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
So that'd be interesting to research a little bit.
I know for me, that TED Talk you're talking about was really fascinating to me. And actually, one thing I think I want to try now is next time I'm in the grocery store, I think I would like to actually maybe go to the different meats and vegetables and stuff like that. And I just would like to see, hey, maybe if I am like almost like asking permission or saying which one of you would like to come home with me. I mean, I it might sound strange, but following my TED Talk, I mean, I'm going to try it and see if I actually maybe receive some answers. I mean, that would be very interesting. And because, you know, like they even say, like, you know, first Reiki, doing Reiki on your food and stuff like that, putting the energy into it, which is really amazing too. But that's going in our bodies, that energy. I mean, that what we eat and drink is like so important, right?
You are what you eat.
Right.
I mm-hmm. have one suggestion.
Yes.
And you can do this next time you're at the grocery store, but maybe do it in your head.
Oh, okay.
Especially if I'm with you.
Hello. Would you like to come home?
Please.
I just pet the package of the chicken. Oh.
Stroking the zucchini.
Were you really happy with it? Was your grass? Did it really taste okay? Get a whole corn husk.
Okay, so I do watch, I don't know if I should mention it or not, mentioning other people. I do watch Sage Goddess online.
Cool.
And she says that she takes a pendulum everywhere, including the grocery store.
Oh, interesting.
And when she's trying to make decisions about things, she gets out her pendulum and uses that as a yes or no when she's trying to make a decision about things.
Interesting.
Even food related.
Well, that actually works, because even making decisions, probably like you're saying, food related, maybe not even just like, do you want to come home with me? But even like, are you good? Is my body even wanting you?
Are we compatible with each other?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Are we compatible?
Okay.
I mean, is that it for this one? Has been an amazing topic.
That's a wrap.
Yeah.
That is a wrap. Well, everyone stay tuned for episode 4. We will be discussing the topic of shadow work. So thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye.